My name is Paul Bowe. I'm a retired clergyman of the American Lutheran Church. I was a parish pastor for 10 years, and later I became a social worker, and for 25 or 30 years I've been in the serving ministry of the church at the level of an agency in Iowa, and then at the national offices of the American Lutheran Church in the Division of Social Services. I've been involved with some of the social issues of the day down through the 1960s and 70s, and now that my wife and I are 70 years old, or I am and she will be soon, we can now qualify for talking about aging, at least from the point of view of being old. That's what we're going to talk about a little bit today. Who's old anyway? We'll try to say a few words about that. Let's start with that. That's not quite the theme for today, but let's get started with that question. Who is old? We used to think that old began at 65, when that's the retirement age. But I think a lot of stuff has come up in recent years that indicates that you can't use an arbitrary spot in life to indicate who is old. So I think it might help us a little bit in our journey through these issues to talk a little bit about who is old anyway. Did you have your hand up?
Well, I said people that think they're old. Think you're young, you can be old and still you're young.
All right, he's saying that you're old if you think you're old. What about people who are physically, have a real hard time? Are they old?
Well, some have trouble, and some of those, they remarkably how they keep on going.
Okay, all right. Even you're saying that physical capacity doesn't necessarily mean old, right? Can you illustrate anything about that? Can you say anything about that?
Well, I have known some people that were physically handicapped, but they didn't let that stop them with their determination. They kept up. They still stayed with it. They stayed alive. They didn't grow into a shell.
Okay. All right. I have an illustration of that. We live in a small, well, we don't even live in town. We live 7 miles out in the country. From a town of 2,500 people called Amory, Wisconsin. And Amory has a sort of a little club for older people. In fact, they've had two of them, community clubs. Communities aren't any different from churches. You get two churches across the street from each other. In this little town of Amory, there are two clubs for older people. Anyway, we went to one of them at the invitation of some. And monthly they have a dinner at a church, and then they do some singing and one thing and another, and then they have a dinner together. Well, they were singing prior to the dinner, and they had sheets, and they were singing "Down by the Old Mill Stream" and "Let Me Call You Sweetheart" and all the songs that we all know very well and love. And the organist, she had to play the organ because that was what was in its little country church. So she was playing, and she played "Let Me Call You Sweetheart," da, 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 and the leader of the group got up and he said, wait a minute. And he said, "Listen, young lady," he said, "we're a bunch of old people. We can't sing that fast." He said, "Play it slow." So he led and he said, "Let me call you sweetheart," and he said, "That's the way it should go." And all the other people nodded their head. Paul and I looked at each other. we were just about ready to get up and walk out, but you can't do that in a small community. But anyway, you're okay. Very good. Who else wants to comment about who's old?
Those who just live in the past and don't look forward to the future nor to today.
Okay. Those who live in the past, they tend to become old, at least in relationship to what's going on in the world. Maybe that's a protection, from having to deal with change, like we were talking about the other day here, or having to deal with new values and so on. Maybe people do dwell in the past just as a protective coding. Can you think of one other reason why people might dwell in the past?
Well, they accomplished something in the past and they do not feel accomplishing much today.
Okay, all right. That's good. I can think of one other reason, and Edna, you know about this too. We have a mutual friend who, he's 71 now, brilliant man, who can remember everything that happened in the past, but he can't remember much that happened half an hour ago, or the conversation. Something has happened to his arteries or something that has made him live in the past. And that's a physiological thing. Okay? Gene, did you have your hand up?
I just kind of wish the word old didn't have such negative connotations.
Okay.
I think I've achieved something getting as old as I am. I'm proud of it.
Okay, I think you should be. She was showing me her pictures today. They weren't pictures of her grandchildren. They weren't pictures of the last nursing home she visited or retirement center. Guess what she was showing?
Scuba diving.
Scuba diving. Some of you have seen them already.
Reputation.
Wow. You ain't old yet. Okay, any other comments on old or?
Well, often when we get in our society, when we're past 65 or something, we're considered over the hill by many of our the society.
Okay.
And you and I, of course, we've been with Indians and know that the Indian elderly are revered and respected and are looked up to and are the ones who are the teachers and the helpers for the young, or mm-hmm. and the young come to them.
Yeah.
And not we're not, they don't often do it.
That ties in with what you were saying. You didn't like the word old, but...
I don't mind the word old, it's the way we think of it.
Okay,
it's
societal.
It's kind of disgraceful, right. You know.
Right, societal attitudes create an image and an attitude and maybe even actions then that relegate certain people to the status of being old.
Well, it's an extension of that. Many of our businesses treat people when they get to a certain age, that's it, you're out,
mm-hmm.
you're too old.
Yes. Right.
That laws are go right along with that.
That's the old retirement business. Now, that has that been alleviated somewhat in business now by the fact that you can't demand that people retire at 65?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's changed things somewhat, I think. So that's a step forward. Yeah.
I have a good memory. It's just short.
Okay.
Places, though, I know that it says in the laws that you can work after 65. Well, that's all well and good, but in many places they start making it rather miserable for those people so that they soon decide, well, goodness, I'm not staying here. And that is wrong, but that's what's happening.
Exactly. We have a friend of ours, but a friend of one of my wife's sisters, who stayed on, and after 65, and she became increasingly unhappy because she felt I can't tell whether it was her feelings or whether there was a real neglect of her or kind of persecution of her or what, but she felt increasingly that she wasn't wanted anymore. And so even though she was allowed to stay on, it became a very unhappy thing. The worst part about that is that after she retired, she remained bitter, you see. And so when she was out to visit Carola's sister a few weeks ago, And she grumped and groused the whole time she was there. So it was kind of a nasty visit because, you know, she carried that bitterness over. So that can be a very traumatic thing, and I think has aged her a great deal in just having to go through that traumatic experience.
Isn't that like a person that if you go around with a frown all the time, people don't like you. But if you got a smile and are happy, they like you.
Okay.
Now, could that tie together with her?
Yeah.
Sure, of course.
I just want to say, you know, I worked over in Yakima for many, many years over there, and there were two of the ditch riders, you know, they were active people, you know, all the irrigation over there, you know. They were 65 years old, and they were going to retire, and so we bought them some presents, and one of them we bought a great big rocking chair, you know. And he was just going to take that rocking chair, and he just sat down, and he just gave up everything. He sat on and he only lasted 6 months and died. He got sick and went all to pieces, you know. So you've got to keep active your brain, you lose your mind and everything else. Unless you use it, you lose it.
How have you kept going? How have you kept going?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, but how do you do it?
How did you do it?
Oh, I just keep busy.
You keep
find
busy.
Find something to do, you know. Find something to do around the yard or this and that one.
Okay.
You know, I've been building small boats and stuff like that, you know, and that sort of thing, you know, the home. So I have something to do all the time, you know, and we have the yard, almost a certain amount of lawn, and just keep active, you know, and I'm still singing in church choirs. And
I was talking to this couple last night, and you're 91?
91, yeah.
And I didn't ask her how old she was, and I won't do that, but...
I'm following.
Okay. Anyway, he looks as vigorous and active as, and acts as vigorous and active as any of the rest of us at 91. So who's old, you know? How do you rate who is old? I have a real hard time with that.
Well, I just can't help but mention this when he talks about singing in the choir. In Bella Vista, where we come from, it's a retirement village. And we have a Messiah every year that lasts 3 hours long. The director is about 8 years old. And it's quite a thing around there. They come from all the churches just packed and they have to put on two concerts.
Okay.
And so forth. And it's totally retired people.
Very good. Edna?
You touched on something. You said you wouldn't ask for her age. Well, I get dismayed by people who are so reluctant to tell their age, and I proudly say I am 72. And I'm proud of it.
Okay.
And I think everyone should just say, there's so many people that pussyfoot and say, even if they're only 40, I have a daughter who's...
I am old-fashioned enough that I don't ask women their age. I suppose I should, but I don't. Pardon?
That's a macho thing then, because you say, you know, you do it to a man, but you don't to a woman. What's the difference?
We'll discuss this later. If you didn't know it, that's my wife. Okay, and I heard
women
you.
Women tell everything. Yeah. Tell her age, they'll tell everything.
Well, I should tell the new people, or I told those that were here before, I got not criticized, but I preached the sermon on Sunday evening. Holding the Eucharist on Sunday evening is the main worship service that begins the week, and I preached the Eucharist at the Eucharist. And after the service, a young man came up to me and handed me a piece of paper with printed on both sides and said, here, I want you to read this. And it said, how Holden people handle sexist language. So apparently he felt that I had been using sexist language in some way or another. So I guess that's the way I am, Edna. I'm sorry.
You know how you should have responded to that?
Pardon?
Do you know how you should have responded
no,
to that?
How no. Should, how should I have responded?
You should ask, do these women who insist on changing the gender of the deity, do they insist on changing the old Adam in us to the old woman in us? Or do they insist on calling Satan Ms. Satan? Or do they want to change the devil and make the devil female?
No, I hadn't asked that.
Next time I'll do that.
I hate to get caught in that kind of a meat grinder, and I'm sorry I brought it up, really, but that's not the subject of this discussion.
Well, you started it.
Maybe we ought to schedule a session on that. How about that?
Edna and I know Paul's on
the Anybody else want to comment on what's old or who is old? I don't see a blackboard here, but I was reading a book not long ago by a man by the name of Bianchi, and he had a diagram in his book. I have it somewhere here. Here it is. He was taking the traditional diagram of the lifespan, and the idea is you start here at birth, you know, level, and you go up through youth, and then you level off, and then old age is a downhill proposition until you finally die. That so from middle age until old age, it's all downhill. Well, this author pointed out what he considered the basic fallacy of this. It creates an attitude that says that youth is a time of vigor and joy and health and all the rest of it. And middle age is a level sort of thing where you don't get too much better, but you don't decline either. And he pointed out that youth is not an ascent. There are young people who are depressed. There are young people who have severe illnesses. There are young people who are handicapped in various ways, some in exactly the same ways that older people get handicapped. And in middle age, you get the same thing. You get ups and downs. And so you could say that this pattern fit every age, up and down. And he felt that this old cliche that we have, that youth is the time of vigor and middle age is a time of consolidation and old age is a time of decline, is a false figure. Because there are older people, like here's a 91-year-old man who's building a boat, you know, and is vigorous and is taking care of their property and everything else and is alert. And how do you say that old age is a time of decline? Sure, there are declines, you know, obviously. You only have to look at us to know that there are certain ways in which we decline. But on the other hand, to characterize old age as a time of decline, you know, that would rule out, I don't know how long you're going to keep on scuba diving.
Well, it'd rule out you going trout fishing there.
Okay, any further comments on who's old?
I just read in the paper not that long ago, a guy was 94 and he got married, but he was short.
Okay, very good. Oh, he said they got married at age 94. What age did you marry?
Did I marry?
Well, this is two
second
days.
Time?
Yeah.
I'm about 75.
75, okay. You told me how many years of married life you've had between you two.
96.
96 years of married life between the two of them. So that gets to be
it. We were each married for 40 years, you know. Yeah. And then I've been married 16 years. So
okay.
We had those all together. What you want to do?
My granddad was married at 82.
And he took care of her until she died 11 years later.
Uh-huh.
And he died at 96.
All right, well, what we were supposed to be talking about today, at Holden Village, you don't have to talk about what you set out to talk about. Holden is a little bit flexible. So what we were supposed to talk about today was the environment in which older people exist. And I call it the condition. We talked a little bit about the condition of retirement. Somebody here said that attitudes toward older people indicate that they ought to retire, and that when they retire, they're out of things. One of the environmental conditions that we live in is that attitude of society, which says older people have left the active world. When they retire from work, they sort of back off from the world. And I think that is one of the most difficult circumstances under which we who are older people have to live. Carol and I get around a great deal and are doing a lot of things, but quite often people will come up to me and say, are you retired? Or what do you do? And I'll say, well, I'm retired. And they'll say, oh, and they'll back off and leave. If I had said, I'm a lecturer at Holden Village and so on, they would say, oh yeah, what's Holden Village? And what do you do as a lecturer and so on? But when I say I'm retired, oh, and that's it. As though somehow I had lost any vitality, I had lost any meaning in life, I had lost any position in life, and so on. So that one of the conditions that under which we live is that of retirement. Anybody want to comment on that?
That all depends on how you answer them.
Pardon?
It depends on how you answer that. Are you retired? I said no to the ophthalmologist. I said I'm unemployed.
Yeah.
And he said, are we supposed to feel sorry for you? No, I'll be getting another job pretty soon. I volunteer.
What I often say is, well, I have retired as far as being on Social Security and pension is concerned, but I haven't retired as far as work is concerned. That somewhat alleviates the problem, but it doesn't really. It still leaves a certain kind of attitude hanging in the air.
One of the attitudes that I think is a problem is that if you are busy, you're worthwhile. And I find that people say to me, are you keeping busy?
Mm-hmm.
And if I fall into the trap of saying, yes, I'm keeping it, oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the implication is, if you aren't busy, why, you don't have much worth.
There's a converse side to that I find in myself that I have to keep scrapping with, and that is, I feel sometimes I have to justify myself by saying I'm busy, or I keep busy, or if I do have leisure time on my hands, I tend to start wondering I should be doing something, you know. I think that's a trap we fall into, that as older people, we sometimes don't learn to just go with the stream and enjoy leisure, and learn how to be leisurely without feeling guilty about that. Or without feeling somehow that we aren't quite up to snuff. So there's a converse side to that, too. Go ahead, Gene.
When people ask me, what do? I say, finally, as little as possible.
Okay, very good. Wow, that's good.
Yeah, it's just like B's uncle says, I get up in the morning, I have nothing to do. When nighttime comes, I'm half done.
Okay, that's just about right. Did you have your hand up? Oh, okay. All right, that's an attitudinal kind of environment in which we live. Another kind of circumstance or environment, and I've listed a number of these, and we'll just comment on them as we go along, is financial. I was always afraid of retirement, particularly for financial reasons, because we had never been able to save any money. We didn't have high salaries, really, although later in life I had a little better than the average pastor, I think, but nonetheless, we were not in a high salary bracket, but we did have a lot of expenses during our lifetime, particularly expenses with our children who were handicapped or didn't live, so that by the time we got to our 50s and 60s, we were just beginning to get our debts paid up. So I was afraid of retirement because I didn't have any savings. Then I found, or we found, I should say, certainly my wife and I together, that with Social Security and the pension that came with retirement in the church, it doesn't provide a very large income comparatively. But we found that our lifestyle changed somewhat too. And that finally we had gotten some of the basic things paid up, like mortgage on our house. We had been able to buy a house, and we had our car paid up, so we weren't paying that kind of thing. Our children had gone, and they were no longer a financial burden to us. And we found that we could live well on basic Social Security and pension. It's not a big income, but nonetheless, we found that we could live well. We travel a little bit. We have a lovely home. We entertain friends. We live a very, very full life. And we have found that retirement has given us a kind of security that we've never had. Now, I want to say just a couple of things about that. And I made this observation yesterday. Most of us who come to Holden Village are not quite typical. We are not quite typical people. I don't see any people of color here, for instance. Blacks, Indians, Chicanos, so on. Probably most of us would not be below the poverty line. It costs money to get here. You know, you've got to pay your train or your airplane or your car. Motels, meals, trip up here, etc., fees for being here, even though the fees are lower for older people, they're still substantial. And when you add it all up, you probably have paid up $700-$800 to get here or be here or more. So we don't represent really several million people in our country, older people who are poor. They never earned enough to get a large Social Security check. They may have not have been on a pension plan. They may not have been able to save anything. But nonetheless, for a great many older people, older age, retirement represents a kind of floor of financial security. Anybody want to comment on that? It's a lot different from the way it was, you know, years ago. Most of us are old enough to remember the years before Social Security started, the years of the Depression, the terrible, terrible worry that descended upon middle-aged people at that time during the 1930s, when they looked at their present circumstances and realized that they had nothing. They had probably lost most of what they had, and there didn't look to be a great many prospects for security in the future. And I think it must have been a terribly frightening time for people to reach middle age and then look toward a bleak future without basic support. I think that now with Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid for those who are poor, public assistance, and all the other kinds of subsidies, subsistences, and grants that are available to older people, we certainly live in an environment of at least minimal security. And I think that's one of the things that older people, of the condition under which we live. Any comments about that at all, or questions?
In our day, mine in particular, I never focused on retirement. That was not a concern. I was so happy in the work that we kept working and just enjoying life as we worked. And every place we were, we loved it. And it wasn't until we had a gathering of the ready for retirement that the church called us together, what our pension would be. I was shocked, of course, when I heard what it would be. But
You thought it was way too much?
It was just the opposite, of course.
You didn't really deserve all that?
I just kept on working 5 years beyond retirement age.
Okay.
And I was surprised that we have done so well afterwards.
Right. I think that we do find that for older people in our generation now, there is a basic floor that we can rely on. And it's really a wonderful thing when we think of how it used to be when we were back when we first started out. Okay? I'm going to mention a number of circumstances for older people that are optional things. Somebody mentioned the retirement village in Arkansas. Was that you?
That's where we are.
You're in Bella Vista. My wife and I went through Bella Vista several times because we have some dear friends in Fayetteville, Springdale, Arkansas, right south of Bella Vista. Yeah. And when we have driven down, we have come to this beautiful hilly country and through Missouri and get into down into the southern part of Missouri and get this beautiful, and all of a sudden you see a golf course lining the road and the stream and houses up in the hills, and you go on for about how long? 8-9 miles?
7 miles.
And more golf courses. They strung out, what are there, 3 or 4 of them along that road there? And a big shopping center and churches and one thing and another, and really there's no other town there. This is a retirement community. How many people live there?
6,000 so far.
So 6,000 so far. Okay, here you get. And we drove once when we came on the way home, we decided to just take off and drive up through the hills. And it was beautiful. My goodness. Lovely homes.
It's a suburb of heaven.
Suburb of heaven, she said. All right, that's getting to be a substantial part of the environment for a great many older people. We've been in Sun City in Arizona, and we've seen other retirement communities like this where there are all the recreation facilities, all of the shopping facilities, all of the amenities, nice homes, and so on. Now that is becoming a significant part of the environment for a great many older people. Let me ask you the question, if you care to comment on that. Is that beyond the average person's means, do you think?
No.
Mm-hmm. If you sold your home back in Podunk Junction someplace, could you buy a home down there?
Yeah, in about $50,000, get a nice one.
$50,000 for a nice home. Well, that's a nice home.
There's an area there with mobile home. Yeah.
That must be hidden. I never saw that.
It's a separate
right above
park.
There.
Oh, it's a separate park. Okay.
And I know somebody who lives on a very small pension who could not afford a house, but they did. They were able to buy this, and they're very happy there. And that's a part of Bella Vista.
Now,
everything is free after you get in. So.
Let me ask you the question, and again, I'm not trying to press you for an answer unless you want to answer it, but what's life like there? I mean, is life meaningful for you? Does a community of older people who are free to move around, are there meaningful things to do? Does life have purpose for you and so on?
You need 36 hours to each day.
Say?
You need 36 hours to each day.
She says we need 36 hours for each day. What do you do?
Any hobby you have, there's something for you there.
Extension courses, too.
Entertainment, you mean?
Pardon?
Entertainment, you mean?
Well, classes, art classes, everything like that. They have a library. They have Seven Lakes. They have fishing, of course, all around, golfing, tennis, anything like that.
Any churches?
Oh, every church, almost every denomination.
Are they busy? I mean, is there anything to do in the church?
Very active, very active.
Okay.
United Lutheran, 7 years ago, built. 7 years ago, United Lutheran built a church. It's all paid for, and now they are building one three times as large.
Wow. Okay.
11 years ago, there were 25 people when we bought our place, and now the membership is close to 400.
All right, I want to bring this up as one of the significant kinds of environments for older people, because it is significant, and of course, having been in the kind of work I've been in all my life, it raises lots of questions for me, you know. For instance, whether it affords a cross-cut of people, a variety of people, or are people pretty much of the same cultural and educational level and so on.
Every profession.
Okay. I guess we better all sign up. Sounds pretty good.
Taxes are very good.
Yeah.
The only thing you don't have is young people.
Yes, we do.
They say they do. Where do you get the young people?
There are six services.
I see.
And around in the towns nearby.
A lot of service positions, you know.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So you do have some contacts.
Also, the developer gives property for anybody who wants to put up a church. And we got our property free for our church.
Anybody else live in a retirement community like this? Where?
Sun City.
Sun City, okay. How many people?
48,000.
Oh, good night.
Except trees.
When I was there, there were about 20,000. That must have grown.
Well, we live in a better one, since that's because it's called Paradise, California.
He gave me a brochure the other night.
Me too.
And oh my goodness. That it really is. If it's like the brochure, my goodness, there were lakes and mountains and vistas of all kinds, and even sunsets, beautiful sunsets.
Greet the preacher well.
Paradise, okay, you keep that in mind.
LBI Seattle is trying to develop one at Providence Heights, sort of surrounding LBI Seattle, and it looks beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And if I were not such a Minnesotan and addicted to Minnesota and to Minnesota winters, I think I would go to Providence Heights.
Okay. Did you hear that? The LBI in Seattle is developing a retirement village in their area. I suppose that would have a distinctly Christian content then to it.
Well, I think
the lifestyle. She told me she was going to leave early, so she isn't mad.
She's young, too.
Yeah. For those of you who are new, that's Barbara Lee, and she is deaf and reads lips. So that's why she sat up in front here. But she told me, you should go to some of her groups. She's really a remarkable woman. Okay, I'm sorry. Did you finish?
I'm through.
Okay. Did you want to say something? No. Okay, well, I think we've said enough about retirement villages. They're a significant part of the environment, and I think we need to recognize that.
What about, does anybody live in a retirement building? I'm thinking in Minneapolis of 7500 York, which is a high-rise apartment building for, or a condominium type of thing for the elderly. Anybody live in one of those? All right, well, okay, they are a significant resource for older people. I'm not particularly thrilled with them. We've been at 7500 York several times in Minneapolis, and because I suppose we have six or eight friends, couples who live there who are friends of ours. But I always have felt that it's a pretty sterile atmosphere.
It's too luxurious. I couldn't stand it.
It's luxurious, but it's also, it's corridors and doors. It's like, to me, it's like a hotel. And I want to go down in the lobby, you know, and so on. I don't have a good feeling about it. But it is a significant thing because it's happening all over the country. Groups are building those all over the country.
Well, my mother-in-law lives in one in Seattle. It's a retirement center, and it's has her apartment, but they do have a big social hall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they come down, and someone cooks coffee every morning, and they make toast and come down for their coffee, and they have a lot of sociability. And one of them is sick, while the others are all concerned, and they will bring something in to help take care of them.
Okay.
And they do have meals at these places.
Yes.
They don't have meals at this one.
Oh, many of them have meals. 7500 York has meals, and I think they're
two a day,
partially optional, so that you don't necessarily have to take them, but you have to let them know if you're going to be around. But and they're for a reasonable cost. Did you want to comment?
In Spokane now, my two sisters and their husbands are... they're building a series of condominiums connected with the Lutheran Retirement Center and Rest Home. And they're off on the side. They use the same swimming pool. They're not finished yet, but they have signed up for them.
I guess I wouldn't really necessarily like to live just in a Lutheran Retirement Center because... I think I might get bored with having all Lutherans around me all the time. Not that Lutherans are boring people. That's not what I'm really meaning. But all our lives we've been so stimulated by people who are different, you know. And it seems to me as I go to 7500 York and so on, they all look the same. And I don't think I'd feel very stimulated in that kind of a circumstance. But maybe I'm wrong. I may be all wet, you know, so I'm just letting my attitude stick out.
I believe a lot of these people in the high-rises probably are former apartment dwellers and feel more comfortable there, or they're not able to handle yard work.
Yeah, okay. That's a very good observation, that many of the people who go to those places are people who cannot handle yard work, cannot do the outside stuff that needs to be done, need a protective atmosphere, and so on. So I shouldn't run them down. I really, you know, please forgive me.
Well, I was just going to say, my office used to be just a few blocks from there, and the thing that always appealed to me driving by it was the fact that they had gardens for the people that were raised up off the ground, so you didn't even have to bend over to pull the weeds.
maybe a lot of them can't bend, you know.
The other day before my wife and I came out here, we visited Mrs. Lola Reiki, some of you know her. She lives at Hearthstone in Seattle, and I think this matter of the protective atmosphere is something that's needed by people such as
that. Okay. I'm glad you brought this up because there is a segment of people in the older population who need that. We're almost at quitting time, but I'd like to just mention a couple of others that are in that category, certainly nursing homes or care homes. I know when Carola's mother got into her 80s, she was living with us. And she was physically very well, but she got very apprehensive. We were gone a lot. I traveled a great deal, and Carola had many things that she was into. And Grandma got, and she was getting more and more hard of hearing, and she got very, very nervous and very, very frightened. And when Carola would go, she'd say, what am I going to do if the doorbell rings? I may not hear it. Or what if the telephone rings and it's an emergency? And what if somebody comes to the door? she got very more and more, and we felt we could not alter our way of living in order to just stay home and take care of her. And she said, I'd like to go to Lingblomston. Now that's a nursing home, but they also have a care part that takes care of people who don't need nursing care. And she was very happy there. But it's also a very limited kind of an environment. There are trade-offs here. You know, you trade off security and you trade off support that you need for something that is limited in contact. You largely are limited to the people who are residents there. They have volunteer visitors and so on, but you know, that's not always the biggest thing in the world. And then comes the level of nursing care. There's endless levels of nursing care available. One of the tragic things about that, of course, is that not all nursing care is supported by Medicare and Medicaid, so that as nursing homes have gotten to be more and more expensive, it's become an extremely difficult thing for a number of people to remain in a nursing home without going on public assistance. And that often means that they can't stay in the institution that they would prefer to be in. It sometimes means that they have to take on roommates or someone to live with, and that becomes a rather difficult problem, in addition to causing some trauma, both in a family that can't support their parent any longer, and in the person who feels that now, instead of being a self-supporting person, I'm on public assistance. And that becomes a really traumatic thing. I can think of one of my very good friends whose wife developed Alzheimer's disease and finally had to put her in a nursing home. She was in a nursing home for how long, 5 or 6 years? It's been costing him $2,000 to $3,000 a month because she isn't eligible for Medicare. And it's just kind of ruined him financially. Just, you know, his whole income isn't much more than that. And he's had to take up outside jobs and so on just to keep on living. So there are some serious problems with that. But that's a significant part of the environment for older people.
Have you had one experience with these living wills?
Pardon?
Have you had experience with these living wills?
No, but I have an article here that I'm going to read tomorrow at our session tomorrow by Jacob Javits, Senator Jacob Javits, who is terminally ill, and he's written it was in the Minneapolis, an editorial in the Minneapolis paper on living. Well, I'm going to read that tomorrow. We don't have time to go into it. Did you want to say something?
Well, I think the old people should legislate for that and make that legal.
Yeah. Okay.
I come from Western New York, and we have. I think we have a lovely setup for the Lutheran Church down there. We have two apartment buildings that are basically for two people, two bedroom apartments. They also have a high rise on them. They have what we used to be the old folks home, where you could have a room and could eat there. They also have two nursing home establishments. One was Presbyterian, but they're linked. And with skilled nursing care, and then so that once you get on what they call the campus, and if you're in the apartment,
yeah,
and you become ill and can't take care of yourself, you are accepted in there. You don't have to search around for a nursing home. And I think that is a unique setup.
Okay.
If you're on at one time, you go back out and come back, and you're considered a resident. And it's security for the people. A lot of them are as able bodies as I am, and they have gardens and everything. But at least at that security that they know when they do get older,
all right, now, we haven't mentioned, it's time to quit. We haven't mentioned the large majority of older people who live in independent living, either in their own home or their own apartment somewhere or some other independent circumstance. I would say that the great majority of older people the great majority of older people are independent in independent living, and I think that's another part of the environment. All right, it's time to quit now, so we'll do that. But we're going to explore some, tomorrow, we're going to try to explore together some thoughts about how we continuing to cope with change and how we find new roles for ourselves as we grow older, so that our role doesn't kind of move into the image of retirement into an institution and then on into the grave. We'll try to explore that together.